Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. What month are we in? May. Monday, May 26th, 2014. And you're listening to episode 104. My name is Rob. Jason just bumped the microphone because he's not paying attention, playing with his Valiant cards.
I'm sorting the cards.
Yeah, you love those things, man.
They're terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible.
Yeah. Valiant cards. If you heard last week, you know that we pitched a game based on Valiant cards, that we kind of opened on the spot. It was, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, listen back to it. It was kind of fun and stupid. It was a fun little experimental pitch challenge for us. Creative endeavor. I'm going to stop making up words to make it sound legit. But Jason, tell me what you're doing right there.
Okay, cards. So I'm sorting these cards out. What we did was, the next day we went and bought a bunch of these Valiant cards, all of them, actually.
Was it eight more packs?
Eight more packs, yeah. We've got, I don't know, over 150 cards. And the plan is, with these cards, because they have this sweet artwork that's super terrible and super Marvel ripoffs and DC ripoffs.
Yeah.
We want to bring these to conventions with us and any place where we're going to hang out with fans. And what we want you to do is we want you to come up to us and tell us this. All you have to say is this. Mm-hmm. I am a Valiant builder.
Perfect.
And you say that to us.
Yep.
And we're going to pull out that deck of cards and we're going to pick one just for you.
Just for you.
That we think this matches your style.
This is you. Yeah. This feels like you.
Yeah.
This feels like the kind of a builder that you are.
Right. Will it be Brian Johnson?
I don't know.
Will it be the Swamp Hulk person?
Swamp Hulk person, maybe.
Or will it be Wolverine? Who's not really Wolverine, or will it be Japanese Colossus?
Punisher. We figured out.
Yeah. He's Japanese Colossus Punisher.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Right. Who knows? Atomic Dude? Maybe. Maybe you're Atomic Dude.
Are you, Cyborg Three Musketeers?
Hey.
Could be.
Could be. You know, I don't know. I don't know. We won't know until we meet you and you tell us that you're a Valiant builder.
And then we'll know. And we'll know. We know you might not remember this. So before the Gen Con,
You know, we'll have Mid Origins too.
Yeah, we'll also have Mid Origins only for the one day.
Only for the one day.
And that's coming up here soon. So we may not remind you again before that.
Yeah.
So trying to remember that. I'm a Valiant builder. Only works in person.
Mm-hmm.
Because we only have so many of these cards to give away. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are also, we should say, we're recording this episode well in advance of its posting date. The reason being, baby.
Yeah, still waiting for that to happen.
So, that any day now.
He keeps saying that.
Yeah, so hopefully by the time this posts, baby will have happened.
Well, by the time this posts, baby will definitely have happened.
Yeah, so.
So.
So that's the thing. So, sorry if, in the meantime, if we've missed any big news events or anything like that, that's why.
Reminds me, there was that one Saturday Night Live sketch back in the day where they had the actor who's pretending to be, like, Ted Koppel, I think.
Pre-recording the deaths of famous celebrities.
Like, Gerald R. Ford mauled by a bear today.
Yeah. I think he was trying to be Tom Brokaw, actually.
Oh, I think it was, too.
But, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
That was great.
That was a funny one, yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. So what you been playing, man?
Oh, gosh. Well, not a ton on my own, but we did play a game with a friend today.
We did.
With Laura, who you guys have heard. If you listen to the playtest episodes, she's a coworker of ours, and she plays on a lot of those with us now.
Mm-hmm.
And she told us last week that she had a game from Idea and wasn't going to do anything with it until she finally agreed to do it.
I was just a bully. I was a bully. Said, you got to be creative, all right?
But she was glad you did.
Yeah.
So she made this game. Right now she said tentative title is Stargazers, but I don't think she wants to change that.
Yeah, she doesn't like it that much, but yeah.
The idea is it's a tile placing game where you're placing tiles that are making like the starry sky.
Yeah.
And you're using tools, binoculars, telescopes, high-powered telescopes.
An observatory. Yeah.
To try and find stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually make constellations by connecting your stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really weird mishmash of mechanics that works really
well. Seems to work pretty good.
Yeah, it works well together, but it's cool because it's a different kind of, it's just different. Like, you know, I feel like it's a very different game than I've seen before.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it. Yeah, you're placing hex tiles down, and where three hex tiles meet, it creates a star, but only if the star icon, the third of the star icon, is printed on that tile at that corner. So you can't make... A star is not at every single intersection of three tiles. And then there are three different colors of stars. So you're trying to plan ahead, and if you can make all three of the colors match, you're going to get extra points at the end of the game. And so you're getting points for discovering stars and naming them, but also at the end of the game, if you create constellations of stars that chain together in various shapes, you get points for that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I like is the money system in the game is made up of notoriety. So yeah. It's not actual money.
Right.
So to get all the things you need, all the tools you need, you need notoriety.
Right. So you know, you're giving you publish a paper, or you give a speech, or you take a group of Boy Scouts on a you know, stargazing trip or something.
Is that actually one of them? I didn't see that one.
Yeah, okay. I had that card. Yeah, so you know, by playing the cards, you're doing these different actions to kind of build notoriety and fame, which you can then leverage to get time at the observatory, or you know, at the super high power telescope, and it's kind of an interesting way to approach that. So I really enjoy it. I mean, I think there's some scoring issues that need to be worked out.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a first rough draft game. I mean, it's
right for her first prototype of this game and first prototype ever.
Yeah,
I think she did a fantastic job.
We had a good time playing it.
We sure did.
We recorded it.
We did. Yeah.
So, and that'll be a bonus episode coming up in a couple weeks here.
Yeah, or we might post it this coming week. You know, we'll see.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Well, it'd probably be this week. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You should have posted the other
one. Because
we're
paying in advance. Recording in advance, but
yeah.
Anywho.
You said we're paying in advance.
I did. We're not.
This is we have to pay to rent this studio.
Actually, listeners, if you're paying to subscribe to this podcast... You shouldn't be.
If you are, someone is lying to you.
Yeah.
Because we are not charging you.
Right. Yeah. So, that's cool. That's a thing. What else do we have happening?
Well, like we mentioned, we are going to Origins for one day.
One day only.
No events planned. We'll probably take a walk to the vendor hall and spend all the rest of the time in the free play area. The board game library area, I believe it was called last year. Where the Unpub is placed to set up.
Sure.
We'll be there all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be there, and we're going to be having a great time. Mm-hmm.
I guess I can say I have a meeting scheduled with a publisher, but I probably shouldn't say who at this stage, but that's exciting.
Yep.
Going to be showing them Epic Monster Tea Party and Innkeepers. So that's pretty exciting.
Yep.
Should I tell my GameCrafter story?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I have one meeting as
Sure. Yeah.
To show off Ramblers to someone, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
We're going to try and maybe schedule other ones, but
yeah,
we don't know if that'll happen or not in the short amount of time. And
yeah,
so some of our stuff is in flux, and so...
Yeah, we'll see. But, so at least one for each of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But your GameCrafter story, you should definitely tell it, because it's
so
funny.
So here's the thing. I had expected to have Epic Monster Tea Party available for you guys to buy by now. And in fact, since we're recording this so far in advance, it might be available this time. Maybe I'll edit in post a little statement now saying, by the way, it is for sale.
I hope you say it just like that.
I hope I do. Hey, this is Rob breaking in here. Actually, Epic Monster Tea Party, the deluxe edition, is available on the GameCrafter for sale right now. You can find a link in the show notes or go to thegamecrafter.com and search for Epic Monster Tea Party. Thanks, guys. So, but I ordered my first copy from GameCrafter. I got it all done for the deluxe edition with all the bonus pieces and so on and so forth. I ordered it from GameCrafter, and their queue time was way long. It was going to take like 3.5 weeks.
Yeah, that was crazy long for what it normally is.
Right, for what it normally is, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it might have been more like 4.5 weeks before it would be delivered, and I was kind of grumbling about that, but, you know, whatever. You get in line. That's just the way it works.
Right.
And everybody's buying their stuff, getting ready for Origins.
And they're honest about it. I mean, there's always... Absolutely. You can always see what the queue is.
Right. So, you know, it's not their fault. They're busy. So, whatever. But then all of a sudden, I got an email confirmation a week in advance saying, "Hey, by the way, your thing just shipped." I was like, "Oh, cool, great, wow!" So they had a good production day. They were overestimating. I don't know what. One way or another,
is this too good to be true?
I'm thrilled. This is fantastic. And I think that was like on a Tuesday, and the delivery tracking said it was going to be delivered to my house on Friday. So I get it from work on Friday, and there's a box in the door from the GameCrafter, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. Man, they used a really big box to ship this to me in. Whatever, maybe, I don't know. I don't care. It's here. This is great. I go inside. I feed the cat, you know, and I tear that sucker open, and I look in there, and I think, wow, that box is bigger than I expected it to be. Wow, that box is black. The box that I ordered is red. And then I pulled the game out of the box, and it was a different game.
I still wish you'd recorded an unboxing video. It would have been the best unboxing video
now
ever.
I always need to do unboxing videos every time.
That would have been so hilarious.
Yeah. And so I pulled this out, and it was a game in the shrink wrap called Gatekeeper. It looks like it's got the, like a samurai helmet outline and some Japanese symbols, and it says Gatekeeper on there. And I thought, well, man, that's not the game that I ordered. You know, I don't know what that game is, but it was still in shrink wrap. I didn't unwrap it. You know, I didn't know what to do. So I immediately tweeted at GameCrafter, and I immediately sent them an email, and then basically said, we'll figure that out, and we'll get right back to you. And that was on a Friday, unfortunately. And it was the fact that they replied at all on Twitter on Friday at like 6:30 in the afternoon. I didn't really expect much more than that, and that's okay. They got back to me then on Monday and confirmed, yeah, okay, sorry, there was a mix-up in our shipping department. We'll get you a new copy printed and out to you as quick as we can. So, you know, I appreciate that. They may go on. They didn't ask me to send the original back, or the, you know, the wrong thing back.
Right.
Which I would have been happy to do, but whatever. So as it stands right now, Epic Monster Tea Party to show up.
Right.
Again. In fact, I don't know, I don't have shipping confirmation or anything on that either, so I'm not really sure when... What kind of ETA I'm looking at?
And I hope they didn't put you back in the queue.
I hope not.
That would be kind of crappy.
Yeah, that would make me grumpy. Anyway, so that's happening right now. When they didn't want it back, you know, and I'm assuming mix up in the shipping department means that whoever ordered Gatekeeper ended up with a copy of Monster Tea Party. So if that person's out there, hope you like it. kind of wish you'd gotten in touch with me and let me know that you got it. I would have contacted you, and I opened your game. Because, you know, what am I going to do? It looks like that this person was ordering a game board.
Right. Probably, in a fancy box,
probably to put together with their prototype. It must have had pieces at home already. And maybe they're ordering an updated copy of the board in a box that's not beat crap, because I've done that before, you know? I don't know. Anyway, there's no contact information in there for the person. Not an invoice in the shipping box or anything. So... I don't know who you are. The game board looks neat, you know.
It does.
it's a hex tile, hexes on the board, and a little map and some symbols. So looks good. Good luck with Gatekeeper. If you ever hear this, let me know who you are. I'd love to talk to you. That'd be cool. I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
We could be friends.
Epic Monster Tea Party. I hope you like it.
And you would have certainly tried Gatekeeper, except for there was no rules. It was just the game board. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be happy to reuse that game board for something.
I was going
to
say, that would be great for a pitch challenge.
Yeah, sure. Why the heck not? Sometime in the future. So, as it stands, no joy on Epic Monster Tea Party at this time. So, hopefully soon. And we're recording next week's episode tonight also, so I will not have an update for you tomorrow night.
Right.
Or next
Unless
week.
Unless he pipes in and says, hey, it's for sale now.
Right. Yeah. Then I will edit something in. Yes, it is for sale. Check out the show notes. Thanks.
You know what we should do?
What should we do?
If the Gatekeeper guy doesn't get in touch with you,
yeah,
we should use this board as part of our Gen Con pitch challenge.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
You know, hold the board up and then let the audience give us mechanics to go with it.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll hang on to it.
So,
we don't throw anything away here.
We don't.
As is evidenced by all the crap in my office.
You've been cleaning
now.
Up, though. You've been cleaning up a lot. Yeah. It's really weird.
It's my wife is making me, because we're probably going to try and move.
Yeah.
So that's also a thing. Anyway, that's probably enough about that. So let's move on to our feature of the week, huh?
Yes.
Okay. So this topic is one that I'd kind of proposed to you maybe even a couple of months ago.
Where'd you been?
Yeah. You're not falling asleep there, are you?
I'm just so tired, man. Yeah. You're so boring.
I am. So the subject is emergent gameplay. Here's kind of how I would define emergent gameplay. And there might be like a better official definition out there somewhere, but my understanding of it, it's kind of a more common thing talked about in terms of video games, but, a game or some kind of things, structure like this, the designer gives the player a set of mechanics or tools or abilities or powers like that, right?
Right.
And the designer expects the players to use those abilities, mechanics, etc., combine them in specific ways to perform certain actions, accomplish various tasks, solve problems, whatever, right? So emergent gameplay, in my mind, is what happens when players use those same mechanics, those same powers and abilities,
right,
in ways in which the designer did not intend to either achieve the same goals, solve the same problems, or come up with entirely new ways to play a game or to interact with that thing.
Right.
Yeah. Minecraft, I think, is an excellent example of that, because in Minecraft you have, there's the redstone system for electricity, for powering your rail cars. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can use redstone to make electric rails that will flip a switch to send to turn the electricity off, so that a minecart will travel from point A to point B without you needing to really do a whole lot. And you can also use switches to open and close doors, that kind of stuff. But of course, what people have done is they have used those same controls to do incredibly elaborate things, like, you know, make calculators. The people have built Bejeweled in Minecraft. You know, I've seen massive 3D printers that will print any kind of shape that you draw in 3D out of different colors of wool in Minecraft. You know, the stuff in there is incredible. And so I wanted to bring up the subject to say, is there a game, first of all, a tabletop game that we're aware of that has that or facilitates that? And if so, or if not, maybe we can identify some ways that might be, we might be able to encourage that. Because okay. I think it might be difficult to design that into a game.
Right, because, I mean, it's by default, it's something that happens that's unexpected.
Right, and you know, then the other side of that is to just simply give players a toolkit. And on a basic level, that's kind of what RPGs are, right?
Right.
RPGs are just basically a toolkit and a setting in which to use those tools. And everything else is up to the players to create. I wonder if there's any kind of a board game, card game, whatever, that has that in it, or could we come up with a concept that would make that possible?
That is a good question.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of kind of what type of design would lend itself to that in a tabletop game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think... I mean, because when you give the Minecraft example, right? I mean, the Minecraft example is interesting because people... Well, see, it's tough. So Minecraft, while there is kind of a story, if you want there to be one...
If you want there to be
one. I mean, the whole point of the game is that it's a sandbox, right?
Right.
And as we've discussed before, that's very hard to do in a tabletop game.
It is, yeah.
So, I mean, when I think about the different ways you could try to make that, you know, a thing in a tabletop game, it's slightly different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay, let's think about... Let's think about when you've been working on Sandbox Showdown, right? And you're having these tiles that you're laying down,
right?
And you are, when you're designing the different abilities of these tiles, you're thinking of ways that those could be combined together to do things,
right?
And then in playtesting, you discover new combinations and things that work together in ways you did not expect at all. And in fact, you said that there was one combo with one of the sets where you could win the game in like two turns.
Yeah, there was. There was literally a way that you could win the game in two turns.
Yeah.
If you got the right combo in your hands.
Yeah. That's kind of an emergent scenario.
Kind of, yeah. If you're going to put it in that collection, I mean, look at a game like Magic.
Sure.
I mean, that happens all the time.
Is that 25 years of worth of cards and different powers and abilities? Maybe not 25 years, but...
A lot of years.
Of cards?
It's probably more than that, because Magic came out in like... 90?
Well, I'm only 34, and it hasn't been out as long as I've been alive. It came out when I was in high school, so it would have been late 90s, I think.
Okay.
We could look it up and know for sure, but we're not going to do that.
I think
that.
It came out in the mid-90s, actually. I want to say like 93, 94. So it'd be 20-plus years.
Okay.
It's probably safe to say around 20 years. But, I mean, they're constantly having to revise what they're doing because people figure out ways to break the system.
Yeah.
But I don't know that breaking the system is necessarily the same as emergent gameplay.
No. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's not strictly break the system, but it
could be break the system, but...
Potentially, but I mean, by my definition, ways to achieve the same goals, which would be to win the game, through methods that were not expected. Because
here's a good example. This is from Magic the Gathering, and this is probably apocryphal. This probably never actually happened, right?
Okay.
But it's a story that explains how you could break the system using the tools in a way no one expected. That's drastic, right? Okay. And again, I repeat, this is probably not a true story.
Okay.
But it's the story that like lots of Magic players heard, especially like when I was trying to be a serious Magic player, but I was terrible at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the stories we heard. So there's this card called Chaos Orb, I believe. The idea is it says, take the card and toss it in the air. Flip it in the air. Like, no, toss it. I think it's toss it in the air, whatever. Or drop it. Maybe it's hold it up and, yeah, it's like Flower Fall style. You hold it up and you drop it.
Okay.
And whenever cards of your opponent's it lands on are destroyed and removed from the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, championship match, right? Guy has Chaos.
I can see where you're going.
What does he do?
He drops it on top of the other guy's deck.
No.
No?
He takes the card and he tears it into small pieces. And then he just sprinkles it over the guy's entire stuff that's out. What happens? He loses everything. Guy wins glory or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Probably not true, but somebody thought of that, right?
Yeah.
Somebody thought of that, and that's a great way, you know, to think about that broke the system, but it did it in a way that was so out there that I would call that emergent gameplay. It's not just like I figured out a combo you want to think
in that case. You're not he wasn't taking advantage of a bug. He was using the power of the card in a way that was not expected. If the rules don't say you can't tear up your cards, if the rules do, the rules say you all of your cards have to be fully intact to play. I mean, if it doesn't say that, then he's not breaking the rules.
According to that story, after that, they did say that.
Yeah, okay.
But I never read the rules, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the question. Now, was he cheesing and being a jerk, theoretically? Well, of course, but...
But if a lot was at stake, right? And you're like, I'm a win.
Yeah.
Okay. Gosh, so... I like when you think of a topic that you make that's really difficult for us to quantify. That's my favorite.
Is it? Okay. Well, let's see what other general stuff we can do in the future.
I'm just kidding. I'm just having a hard time. Like, I just hate when I can't think of examples of really good scenarios for that.
Well, so mechanics that would facilitate that. I think to use the Minecraft example, we have a lot of small pieces, a lot of small systems that individually have one unique function, ability, effect, whatever, right? So if we're talking about Minecraft, we're having a switch. A switch either turns something on or turns something off, okay? That's all it does. A piece of powered rail is either powered or not powered. You know, a bunch of binary options. And in some cases, maybe there's three options. But that is kind of... Yeah, so simple, small, simple actions that may be able to be combined in complicated ways to do amazing things.
Yeah. I guess another thing that could help that is like lack of clarification, like with the Magic Card instance, but also in a game like where, think of a game like Monopoly. Now, in Monopoly, you're allowed to trade. Is that technically a rule?
Yeah, you're encouraged to trade in Monopoly.
Okay. Let's say you weren't, though. But let's say it doesn't say you can't trade, right? Because we always played that you could trade, but we always thought that wasn't actually a rule. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I hate reading rules. Mm-hmm. So, and when I was a kid, I really hated reading rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're in a game where, the idea is you've got these things you're managing, and you say, hey, Rob, Let's start trading back and forth. Let's help each other out, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, it doesn't say in the rules we can do that, but it's another way to meet the goal, and it doesn't say we can't do that.
Yeah. So that's a tough argument to make then, actually.
What do you mean?
Well, because I would call that house ruling. See, not...
Right. Where, yeah. I guess emergent gameplay means you have to be within the constraints of the game.
Right.
But doing something that they didn't, the designer didn't expect you to do.
Yeah, using those specific powers, abilities, mechanics, whatever, in a way, and combining them in a way that was not expected.
What about there was that time with Frankenstein's Legacy when you were playing, and that super serious card player dude was playing it, and instead of playing like everybody else, where they were building up their deck and getting things they wanted, dude ended up with like 12 cards in his deck.
Yeah, that's true.
And he played the game in a completely different way, and he destroyed everyone, right?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized in thinking back over it, he actually was using one of the rules the wrong way and cheating. but by him doing that, I thought, oh, well, that's an approach that never even occurred to me. So I should change the rules so that he can do that, to give him the option. Because if you're going to be that sneaky and that, you know, tight about it, then great.
But he
also said that's how he plays deck builders. That's his strategy, is to make his deck as lean and mean as he possibly can.
How does that work with Dominion?
I don't know.
Seems impossible.
Yeah, I have no idea. But anyway. So that's a good point.
I mean, I guess I hate to use the word like exploiting things in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what it feels like. It's just, that to me sounds like a negative thing, right? Whereas in Minecraft, it's not a negative thing. It's a positive thing.
Yeah.
I
don't think there's anything wrong with exploiting. I mean, I guess whether that's good or bad depends on the other players, really. You know, if you're exploiting one specific feature of the game, as long as you're not breaking the rules of the game, you might be kind of cheesing a little bit. But if everybody agrees that you're not being a jerk, then is there anything wrong with that?
Here's, and I guess that some of these I think are of just our strategy, right?
Yeah.
Like, but, let's take Stone Age, right? And this may end up being a terrible example. Take a journey with me. We'll find out.
Okay.
So Stone Age, what if the way I decide to play in Stone Age is to get all of one resource and then dole that resource back out slowly so that other players can get it, right? Because I can spend those resources on my turn, right? So if I see that you're going to go to get something, you're like, oh man, hey, I'm going first next turn. I really need this. And you're like, all right, well, I'll go ahead at the end of this turn and I'll buy some of this, put these gold back out there. You can go mine gold next turn. Now you're controlling the game in a way that's not meant to be done in the rules.
Yeah.
You've now kind of made yourself like having a monopoly, say, on the gold or the wood or whatever.
Yeah.
Forest, whatever they call it in that game.
You know what? I think one important piece we're missing here is that the goal, the win condition, also needs to be kind of simple.
Yeah.
I'm thinking now about a game called Gunpoint, a video game called Gunpoint, and it's a spy game, and it's a 2D game. You're the spy, and you are outside of a high security building, and inside the building are guards that are probably going to try and kill you, and there are cameras that can do things. And you need to get into the building, you need to find the secret plans, and you need to get out. And that's it. I mean, you're not going to get points for doing it stealthily. You just need to get the plans and get out. So you can go in there and you can kill everybody. You don't have a gun, though. Well, maybe, I don't remember now. I think maybe you do have a gun. But you only have a certain number of shots. Maybe that's what it is. So you can go in there and you can kill everybody, but the guards are quick draw. So you got to be real fast, or you got to catch them when they're looking the other way. Otherwise they're going to shoot you first. And the way you do that is you can flip switches to turn lights on and off, and you can use some kind of a special ability to rewire things. So, you know, you go into your special mode, and this light switch that you're flipping right now is tied to the light up above. But if you go into the special mode, you can rewire that light switch so it opens a door, which will distract the guard, and he'll go into that room and see what's going on, and then you can move through the room safely. Okay.
Okay.
And so the designer makes these different stages where he specifically has something in mind as to how to solve that puzzle. This is a puzzle game.
Right.
And then he puts it through playtesting, and he realizes that tons of playtesters are solving these puzzles in different ways that he never expected. Some much simpler, some much more complex. Things that are happening that he'd never even intended to happen. That's a good example of emergent gameplay. And I think the key thing that we're missing here is what he has, which is a very simple goal.
Well, you also said something else that kind of rang true with me, which was a puzzle. Because many times a puzzle in a game can be solved in multiple ways, right?
Yeah.
If you kind of have open turn where you say, mm-hmm. you know, take your actions this turn, do whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
and it's a bit more free form.
You know what? Is chess a good example? Because chess has those pieces that each have a very simple way of moving, and the goal of the game is to eliminate the other player's king, and whoever came up with chess, who knows who that person is, probably thought, it probably never imagined the infinite ways in which a game of chess could play out, and all the different ways that a person could set it up to capture the opponent's king. So maybe chess is a great example of emerging gameplay.
Well,
maybe that's one reason why it's had the longevity that it has, why it's classic, why it's chess.
I mean, I guess the only thing I would counter with that is if the point of the game is to kill the king or to put the king in checkmate, I guess that turn afterwards you've killed the king, right, is the idea.
Yeah, that's the idea.
For that to happen, I mean, you're still working within the standard confines of the game, right? I mean, anytime you're doing that. Now, as in the different strategies, but then I guess, you know.
But you're still using the different simple powers of each unique piece, and you are arranging them in such a way to make trap inescapable.
Right. I guess here's.
There's no one perfect way to play chess, is what I'm saying.
Right. Here is something that I think is tough about this conversation. You said the goal needs to be simple. But in Minecraft, the goal is so simple that it's basically non-existent. The goal is to have fun, right?
Well, yeah.
Do what you want to have fun.
You're right. I mean, in that there basically is no goal in Minecraft, mechanically speaking.
So,
other than to kill the Ender Dragon. But
I mean, that's...
That's right. A made-up goal. That's just that's a forced goal that nobody cares about.
Well, no, a few people do, which is why there's a goal.
All right.
Because people are like, I really want to beat this game. I said, okay, we'll give you a dragon, then go kill it. But you see what I mean? So that's why I wonder if it's so tricky with tabletop games, because there is always a win condition. There's always that you have to shoot for. I mean, I guess you don't have to shoot for it, but like if I sit down to play a board game with someone, I mean, we darn well better finish the game one way or another, right?
Yeah. Maybe this is too complicated a thing to quantify in tabletop game terms, apart from making it an RPG. I've also been playing a video game called Sir, You Are Being Hunted.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that before.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a neat thing where you're trying to get the special mystical parts to back together to build your time machine or something. I don't know. That's not really important.
You're running from assassinating robots.
Right. And you can just run up and kill all those robots, or you can throw a bottle to distract the robots and then run, get the thing while they're distracted. And you can, or you can set a trap, you know, to catch them, and on and on and on. There's a lot of simple systems that you can kind of combine together in interesting ways to make things happen. But, gosh, I don't know. Maybe this is too complicated a thing for tabletop.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
We're also not particularly smart people, so.
I'm sure there's some designers that are super smart out there that are going to be like, hey, dummies.
Yeah. Well, that's happened plenty of times.
Why didn't you talk about this?
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me because I guess that when I think of emergent gameplay, I think about if as long as you're doing something not in the way that the designer intended, that should count, right? But the problem is, like, I remember with Water Balloon Washout, somebody was doing something in a way that I was like, that's not what I expected. But I mean, that's not necessarily emergent gameplay just because that's not what I expected.
Well, okay, emergent gameplay, the idea of a type of a method of playing a game that emerges that was not expected by the designer.
The problem is it's really hard to quantify that when you don't know the designer. Who's to say how the designer wanted chess to be played? Maybe he was really smart, you know what I mean? And he was like, I can think of a million ways to play this game because I'm a genius.
That could be. Gosh, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe most of the games that I'm playing, I'm playing completely contrary to the way that I was expected to play because I'm an idiot and terrible at strategy.
I didn't say that.
Well, I mean, that could be a legit thing, though. I mean, when I play Ticket to Ride, maybe I'm being real stupid about playing Ticket to Ride. And the only reason that I win half the time is because my wife is every bit as bad as I am. You know? I don't know. I've only ever played Ticket to Ride with my wife, with some friends when we showed it to them for the first time, and they didn't know either. Or with a group of people at Gen Con who had all played it a bunch of times before, and I won because the set was messed up and I got like three of the same route and got a ton of points.
Nice. Hey, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah. The main dude who was playing with me was real pissed.
I bet he was. You know, I'm just thinking, this is a super simple thing that I'm going to call emergent gameplay, and okay. I don't care what anybody else says.
Okay.
Think about Forbidden Island, right?
Okay.
Have you played that before?
Still haven't.
You get the idea, right? You're working together. Think of a co-op game in general, right? The social interaction that happens in a co-op game, that's not necessarily decided by the designer ahead of time, right? In fact, I would argue that it wasn't, and this is why, because so many games now that are co-ops are working so hard to get rid of the quarterbacking thing, right?
Yeah.
Where one person kind of takes over and tells everybody else how to play.
Right.
Because none of the designers expected that when they first started making co-op games. That was going to happen.
Sure. Okay.
And it changes the way those games are played, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Bam. That doesn't feel like a real big, like, bam.
I'm not sure if that's, if that's a bam. I'm not even sure if that's emergent gameplay. I think that's just simply identifying a flaw that's kind of inherent with a co-op experience.
Fair enough.
All right. Anyway, that's enough of that. Beat that up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, you're going to pitch a game.
Yep. It's Remember my turn that? Again. It's my turn. I haven't pitched an actual game in several weeks.
No, not on your own.
Yeah. And we didn't pitch anything on our 100th episode. And the last two episodes were our inspiration kind of things. So this game, last week, I had that moment of inspiration where I was thinking about a game about Band-Aids that you can sell in a Band-Aid box, or like a tin Band-Aid box, because I thought, what a great idea. And so I thought, let me see if I can kind of come up with something here. I'm calling it Boo Boos and Bandages.
All right.
Which is a stupid name. I just like the Boo Boo Band kind of thing. You know, a better name might be like, you know, Ouch or something. Just Ouch. Anyway. Okay. Okay. This is a game with a changeover. Okay.
First half, you're hurting yourself. And the second half, you're using bandages.
Well, yeah.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's just my guess.
I mean, duh, right? So, okay. So there's one deck of cards. And the cards are tall and skinny. Because they're, you know, shaped like a Band-Aid, right?
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, they're not actually shaped like a Band-Aid, but like it would be like tall and skinny rectangle as if it were a Band-Aid in a wrapper. And the card backs would all look like a Band-Aid wrapper.
Nice.
Okay. All right. So that tall skinny idea, cuz it's got to fit in the tin, made me remember back to my Slender Man idea.
Right?
Or cuz that was supposed to have tall skinny cards and half black and half white. You know, and halfway through the game, you turn the cards around 180 degrees. So the first half of the game, you're playing with the white cards, and the second half of the game, you turn the cards in your hand around. You're playing with the black sides of those. Okay, so that it was kind of a little bit of inspiration for me to explore this game. So, here's how it works. There's one deck on the table. Let's say it's a 52 card deck. I don't know. Maybe that's not enough. We'll start with there.
Okay.
All right. So it's there's one deck of cards that all the players are playing from. It will start of the game. You each start with say four or five cards. I don't know.
Wow, you really thought through this pitch.
I haven't made the whole deck yet. I'm just saying, this is the concept of it. All right. All the cards in your hand, half of them are white, half of them are black. You know, the top half of the card and the bottom half of the card. Okay. I already explained that. I'm sorry. A little discombobulated here. I came up with this pretty quick. Okay, so the black side is the boo-boo side, or I'm going to call it the scrapes side. And the
sounds better.
Yeah, and the white side is the heel side, the Band-Aid side. Okay. The first half of the game, you are drawing cards into your hand. Okay. Four cards in your hand at the start of the game. On your turn, you draw two cards, and then you can play two cards. Okay. When you are playing two cards, the first card that you are playing, you have to play a scrape card.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The second card, you have to discard into a heel pile. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So each player will have a scrape pile and a heel pile in front of you as you're playing these cards. All right. The scrape cards are going to do things like, well, either it's going to be kind of on the base level, they're going to be like scrapes and cuts and bruises and bumps and whatever. And they'll have a severity rating on them of a 1, 2, or 3. Okay. You know, so then the 1, 2, and 3 is also how you're going to heal those things. So all the band-aids will also have a heal value of 1, 2, or 3. Okay.
Right.
There are other special cards, powers that will allow you maybe, they'll give a multiplier to a scrape value. So if it's played on top of a scrape 1, then it's going to turn a 1 into a 2, but it'll turn a 3 into a 6. Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. There are scrape cards that will allow you actually to steal one of your opponent's scrape cards and put it into your heal pile. Okay. And why that's a good thing, we'll get to. Stuff that allow you to draw more cards, allow you to play more cards, things that can will make it so you can chain multiple scrapes together so that you can't just play one heal card to heal one scrape. It's going to say the next 3 scrape cards on the deck all have to be healed at the same time, so you have to play enough heal cards to cumulatively heal all those at once. You know, it's like a severe accident kind of thing. I don't know, whatever the deal is, right? And there wouldn't be actual pictures of scrapes and cuts and bruises.
Gaping wounds?
No, it would be like words that say "ouch" and "ooh, that hurt" and "owie" and whatever. You know, I don't want it to be gross.
I feel like, so you said the cards are half black, half white.
Yeah,
should be half red, half white.
Oh, that's better. You're right. Yeah. Okay, that's much better. Yeah.
Maybe
okay.
If the cut's really bad, it should be green, like it's gangrenous.
I'm not going to do that.
No, don't.
I don't want to be gross. I already tried gross with Frankenstein's Legacy in a few cases, and that was not well received. That was kind of one of the most common comments that I got from people. This game's kind of gross, dude. Okay.
Quit stitching stuff.
Yeah. So, okay, when the deck runs out, and that's why I'm thinking 52 cards, because so the game doesn't take a long time.
Right.
When the draw deck runs out, then the first phase of the game is over. Okay. Now, and you, whatever cards you have in your hand, you hold on to. Okay. You now take your heal pile and you shuffle that, and that is your own personal draw deck. Your scrape pile, you move over to go in front of your opponent. So you trade scrape decks. And now you have to use the cards that you saved in your heal pile as your draw deck to heal as many of the scrapes in front of you as possible.
All right.
Okay. Then the game ends when either somebody runs out of cards to play or when one of the scrape piles is empty, and then you get points for every scrape card that you were able to heal. Okay.
Nice.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Heal card powers. I mean, there are base things like band-aids and stuff that will heal your 1, 2, or 3 scrape. There are multipliers, so you can play that along with a heal card to multiply its power, its effect. Something, maybe you can reuse a heal card, draw more cards, play more cards. Something that'll allow you to use a card and then hold it for your next turn as well. Okay. Still draw 2, play 2 on every turn. Of course, in the second phase, though, you're not going to have to discard one card every time. So in the first half of the game, you're taking cards and you're basically stacking a scrape deck for the other guy to get over, and you're setting aside heal cards to set yourself up for later in the game.
So you have to weigh it when you're looking at it.
Right.
Do I want, like, so how would the... So I know it's early, bad scrape would be really good heal?
Exactly. A 3 scrape would also be a 3 heal.
Right.
So
you had to make the decision.
You're going to hurt that guy, you're going to help yourself.
Right. And the neat thing is, you're watching what your opponent's doing, right?
Yep.
Like, so you're like, oh, he's putting a lot of high-value scrapes in there.
Yep.
Maybe I should be putting a lot of high-value bandages in mine, you know?
But if you're putting high-value bandages in yours, then you're not putting high pain scrapes in their deck.
It's devious, dude.
It is devious, right. Yeah. So I think it's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it really makes you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's devious, yo.
Yeah, I think it's neat. And then, you know, your special things, your special powers would also be 2 special powers on one card, right? You know, so there'd be a positive multiplier and a negative multiplier. And then, like, for example, when you're going through your scrape deck, if one of those multiplier cards comes up, it would say, this multiplies the power of the card, of the scrape immediately below it. Or if it connects multi, it would say, the next 3 scrape cards that are revealed all must be resolved at the same time. That kind of thing.
Should have those be like infection cards. It's kind of gross.
A little gross. But I mean...
But on the other, you could have it be like, hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah, that right.
That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mom's kisses, you know.
Oh.
Right, right. Cute stuff like that.
Right, so. Right. Dog slobber.
Heals everything. Rub some dirt on it. Yeah. My favorite, back when I had a job working on a dock at a department store, we'd just say, slap a sticker on it. Because so we would rip a sticker off a box that we just pulled off a truck, slap it over so it wouldn't bleed everywhere, get back to work. It was the best.
That's just a great way to get infections. Well,
it was terrible, but whatever. We had work to do.
You used duct tape.
I've got some good scars, actually, from that job.
I've seen plenty of people in movies use duct tape to tape stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea is sound. You stop it from bleeding. You seal it shut.
Right.
It's just not very sanitary.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, so
wow.
Boo-boos and bandages. Maybe that's not a good theme for that, you know? Maybe I could retheme that and have something that's a little more marketable. I just really like the idea of it being in a Band-Aid box, you know, which I think is a really catchy thing. I don't know. What other themes do you think I could use with those mechanics? I think it's a pretty sound mechanic.
What was the game about, like, this really thin dude who was evil? I get it. It's a Slender Man. Yeah. No. Yeah.
The Narrow Man.
Honestly, you could literally put any theme on there that just has about a problem and a solution.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah. I mean.
Right. Which might be more marketable, frankly.
Well, I think that if you could sell that to game rights,
mm-hmm,
and make it fun about boo-boos and bandages, maybe yeah, you could pull that off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I'll do that, though. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so there you go. Boo-boos and bandages. It's a silly idea. But I think it might have some potential for a kind of a simple, lightweight play. Again, it's a two-player card game, because I so often think in terms of two-player card games. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't.
Boy, do you ever.
Yeah. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't scale it up to three or four, or maybe even six players. You would just need more cards to do that. And you would, you know, pass your scrape pile across or to the left or something like that, you know, but,
right. Yeah. I don't see why that wouldn't work.
Right. But I don't know that would really add anything to the game.
It would decrease the meta.
Yeah. So I think it would just basically be good as a two-player game. So that's my whole pitch. I don't know. I guess that's probably enough. Listeners, if you like it, let me know. I think it's kind of a neat little concept. We should go on. Do we have some questions, comments, all that jazz?
That we do. So, question from John Morgan. His question is, what the hell is an offset card system?
Okay. What is an offset card system? It's an idiot idea presented by a moron who didn't understand what he was talking about. Don't worry about it. It's dumb.
But you can go back and listen to any episode that mentioned rocket wreckers or splitters.
All right. So just to recap, because I mean, that's how this works, right? You tell people things. The idea was that,
ask us a question. We'll make fun of you and not answer it. There's a good incentive, Rob. Thanks.
Yeah, no, that's how it works. I mean, those are the rules of radio. Something comes up, even if you've already explained it 100 times, you kind of have to explain it again because for the just in case somebody's hearing it for the first time, like this guy. What was his name? You already put it away.
No, I was pulling it up right now. His name is John.
John
Morgan.
Okay. So John Morgan obviously has not listened to our entire catalog and just doesn't know. So that's how that works. Okay, so offset card system. I was inspired more than a year ago after seeing a card that was printed crooked, where it was the border was offset, so that you when it was printed, you got part of the card that was intended and part of the next card on the sheet for when it was cut. And so I thought, well, what if that was intentional? So that the only way to play a card on the table was actually to play two cards down next to each other to combine into one full image. What if that was intentional? What are the options for combining all that stuff together? And I think the concept of that was a great idea. That you know, every time you're playing two cards together to do one thing, you're sacrificing another option of assembling them. But the reality of it was just bad, because because people are used to looking at everything on one card, and asking them to ignore half of the information on two cards was just too difficult. And that's not, I'm not saying that the people who were trying to play were dumb. It was just not a good design.
It was difficult to read sometimes.
It was very, most of the time. And I designed it, and I kept having problems.
Right.
You know?
And you also read it like fifth grade levels, so that doesn't help.
I'm not going to say you're wrong, because it's not an argument worth having. but no, so offset card system, that was the idea. And the inspiration was that, hey, this is such a simple and versatile concept. Why can't we apply this to a lot of different designs? And it didn't work because of the reasons that I just said. So, rest in peace, the offset card system, RIP OSC. and we move on and we learn from our mistakes. You know, that's what this show's about.
That's right. Hey, a couple other comments here, actually several more, but, one from Gavin. Gavin was the guy who said, "Hey, that game sounds really cool." And we're like, "What game was that?" Which was our fault. And he responded and said, "Hey guys, the comment I made before the playtest was for And Out Come the Wolves."
Oh,
I'll be more specific in the future.
Not your fault. Not your fault. Jason's fault. Totally Jason's fault.
another one here from. Oh, I just screwed it up. Okay, from.
You should just start bringing your iPad. So you can actually read it.
My wife won't let it have it.
She won't let it leave the house. Buy her one so you can use that one. We would be pulling this up on the computer, but my computer will crash if we try and do that. Because my computer sucks.
Yeah, okay. We already read that one before. Oh my gosh, am I going the wrong direction? Oh, what's happening? Oh, I got it. Woo-hoo! Robin Gibson, sir. Card Game Simulator, the card game.
Yeah.
Sounds like it has some potential.
Oh, thanks.
Though maybe that has something to do with how sparse it is. In other words, Rob, because you didn't put too much design effort in, it sounds better than the stuff you try hard on.
Okay. Well, that's
I said that, not him.
Encouraging?
The way I thought the game would work when Rob started describing the components was that as you played cards, you actually were adding mechanics to the game. Like cross between Rummy and Flux. Flux does that.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, maybe the two of set collection would be you may trade a card in your hand for one in another player's set. Or the five of take that might be if anyone picks up this card, they must trash a card from their hand.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's neat.
It might be cool to pursue it from that angle. Maybe when you make a set, those cards are cleared from the board, which would keep things from getting too chaotic.
Too messy, yeah, absolutely.
But not in the strategy breaking clear everything kind of way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think those are some good...
That's a great idea.
Some good comments.
Yeah.
We've also got a couple emails here.
Good.
The first one is from Julius Besser. Or Besser, Besser, I don't know. I'm bad with last names.
You are.
And first names. Mm-hmm. He says
just about everything you're bad.
The email is titled "In a Hail of Bullets."
In a Hail of Bullets.
He says, "Hey guys, I've been catching up on your podcast. I was a bit behind, and I recently listened to your bonus episode about In a Hail of Bullets. The rules in the game aren't quite clear to me. No big surprise, me. So hopefully my suggestion won't be too far off. I heard you guys discussing how to encourage people to play evidence and also make it easier. I also heard about discussing removing crime from the deck. First off, I would like to suggest replacing motive in the instead of the word crime. I suggest you distinguish between the two. He also says have the evidence cards be equipable, and then have the other cards be one-shot actions. When you play other cards like Dame or Contact or Drinks, you get a one-shot action, like move to the center of the board by playing evidence in addition. In addition to having the evidence out there for the end of the game, will always give you a permanent bonus. For example, a motive card like Firestarter will give you a bonus when entering the fire station, or a weapon card like Pistol will allow you to not count one of the bullets in your hand against your hand limit, although it still is in your hand counts towards your KO limit, which makes sense. Players may use generic action points to put evidence down in front of them, but a player may never have more than two of any one type of evidence card in play. So what's interesting here is that this does sound quite a bit like what the rules actually are. I'm not necessarily on board with changing from crime to motive, because I like the fact that crime is in there, and I get that it might not match the theme perfectly because you always know what the crime is. So it's definitely something to consider. Other than that, a lot of the stuff you're saying, well, I didn't maybe define it that way, that actually does line up with where the game is going. So
and what your intentions are.
Yeah, so great thoughts on that.
Yeah.
And then he'd say, he says, I hope this will help. Now then, on to another point about the podcast.
Uh-oh. Should I be afraid?
I'd like to request you guys get a podcast icon. I'm subscribed to your podcast using Dogcatcher, and Android using RSS feed. I think what he means is, and you know, in the top left corner of our website, we don't have one of those little icons.
Oh.
We should have one of those.
Yeah.
He's right.
No, so it's like just showing like generic WordPress thing?
Yeah, oh, probably. Yeah. So he can't find us.
Oh.
But we have one on the co-op because Chevy Dodd just one day went in and just did it.
Yeah.
So...
Oh,
Chevy, the password's the same, dude.
Yeah.
Feel free.
No. Help the guys out here.
But anyways, it might be a good idea to do that. I don't see why not. I actually wondered about it before when Chevy did it to the other site. So have our little heads up there. Yeah.
Figure out how to do that, Jason.
Smiling.
Yeah.
I'll talk to Chevy.
Okay. Yeah. What
I'm not going to figure out how to do it.
What should our icon be?
Our Twitter heads put together. Smiling.
Is it big enough for that?
Just the two heads? Yeah, I think that would fit.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how big that image can be.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll ask Chevy.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy.
Chevy will know. He's not busy or anything.
Well, by this time, his campaign's over.
Yeah, okay.
So now he's just working on the rest of it. So he's got time to ship and stuff.
I hope so.
It's all good.
Yeah, cool.
All right. So one more from Thomas Stally or Stally or...
Stoli?
No, it's S-T-A-H-L-I.
Okay.
Stoli, maybe it is. I don't know.
Probably Stoli.
Hey guys, I just had some comments and questions after listening to your last episode. First of all, I'm glad to hear you have a better method for gathering comments. I think you missed my last email.
Probably
happened.
Probably did. We suck.
But that might just be as well that my email provider is not great, and that happens. Hey, it's possible, but it's probably our fault, Thomas. Sorry about that. First, I liked your thoughts on Hanabi. I have the game as well, and have found it to be as much of a social experiment and group experience as it is a game. It's much less about how high you score, I think. I think it's about how high you score, but that's just because I like to be awesome. But no, he's right. I think it's more about finding out what you as a group are comfortable with doing to get your score. I have seen people try to play perfectly by the rules and get better until they manage a 25 score without any cheating. My girlfriend, on the other hand, can't go without giving extra hints, and she doesn't see anything wrong with that, and neither do I, because for one thing, as long as everyone agrees, is it even cheating? Which is basically what Rob
said. Exactly, yeah.
And the only way to be really good at the game without going against the written rules is by developing unspoken subsystems so you can convey more information that would be otherwise possible,
so you gather,
like mutually agreeing that if I tell you two cards are red, the first one I touch is the one you should play.
Yeah.
Or be lucky, of course. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. He's totally
absolutely
right.
So you're either cheating while you're playing or you're cheating before you start playing.
Well, that's the thing. And that's why he said there'd never be a Hanabi tournament where you worked with a team because you would just come up with a perfect system.
Right.
And you should be able to get high 20s every time.
Yeah.
Maybe not perfect because there is some luck of the draw in there too.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. Also, a small comment about Marvel Dice Masters.
Yeah?
I heard on the Dice Tower podcast that the only cards that only cards are rare, not dice. Also, every hero has multiple cards, Common Wolverine, Uncommon Wolverine, Werewolverine.
Yeah.
Which have different abilities, but apparently are not more powerful. It's just different.
Different.
Interesting. Okay. They also said that it was different than Courier's, less random and very attractive for former Magic players and their like. Probably because it's strategic.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked your discussion on value propositions, something I have thought about. Hey, somebody liked that. That's good.
Good, yeah.
Makes me very happy. I have even drawn the exact same analogy to movies you have, and board games do fairly well on that scale, right? Like the movies you own that you've never watched.
Sure.
The Walmart $5 bin is really good for that.
Yeah.
The way I see it, another thing you didn't mention is the fact that I can always improve the value proposition of a game by playing it more often.
It's true.
And that's very true.
Absolutely.
And by the time I get sick of one game, I have usually easily gotten enough satisfaction out of it to feel good about my purchase. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Settlers is one of my first non-children board games, and I've probably played it 300 plus times. Dude, that's awesome.
It's incredible.
I've probably played it 100 times. So
I've played it one time.
Right.
But I also haven't bought it, so.
Right. So you got a really good value proposition.
I did, man. It was great.
Especially since you were playing it wrong.
But how many times? Anyway, sorry.
The value proposition is excellent.
Jerk.
And now, 10 years after my craze, I look at it finally and again, now and again, and would even enjoy playing it again. So I think it doesn't matter if a game sits a while unplayed in the end, it can still have good value. Also, some games I just like owning. I'm like that with movies,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, well, yeah. For me, for both, yeah.
There's a TV show, Justified, that I buy the seasons of just so that I can let Rob borrow it so he'll watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of movies that I can see anytime I want to on Netflix, but I will go out and buy that Blu-ray because I'm going to buy that
Blu-ray.
You're
going to own it.
I might not always have a Netflix subscription.
Yeah, and some games you just like owning and have worth to me even if they're not played. That's totally true. My example would be Twilight Imperium 3. For Rob, it would be Twilight the Movie. I also own both expansions and have put lots of containers for
so
sorting.
So angry tonight.
100 extra dice. Whoa. And all sorts of extra player aids in the box. Even though I have only played it twice, although hopefully not the last time, I am happy to have it and am satisfied with the value proposition, simply because I take great pride and joy in owning it and seeing it on my shelf. Do you have similar experiences? Oh, absolutely. Like we've been describing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Goes through.
For sure.
And how many games do each of you have? Probably have 100.
I think you have more than I do.
Yeah.
I'm probably in the... If you count all the things like, you know, Incredible Hulk Operation and Simpsons Monopoly and, you know, that kind of garbage, I've probably got 40 or 50
And Gatekeeper.
Games. And Gatekeeper. I'm not going to count that. I probably have 40 or 50 titles.
And actually, I'm planning on going through sometime soon and stripping out some of the ones.
Yeah.
I'll pull parts out of ones I know nobody wants, and the other ones I'll just donate to Goodwill.
Sure.
Or maybe give away on the show if they're good enough.
Yeah. And that's also not counting all the D&D minis that I have, and you have way more than I do.
Yeah. He says, somehow I always pictured you with somewhat smaller collection of games, buffed by scores of your own designs. But if you have 10 to 20 unplayed games, you probably have quite a few in general. And we also have a lot of, I mean, I have tons of prototypes. I think you do too, just lying around.
I do. Yeah, I think, you know, gosh, maybe I don't even have that many. Maybe I've got, let's say I have 40 games. I probably have I probably got 8 or 10 that I've never played.
I have more than that. I bet I have 20 that I've never played, if not more.
You know what I still want to play that you have?
What?
Red November.
Yeah, we should play this
sometime.
I've never played it.
I'd
like to play it too.
I've heard more and more things that I really want to play that game.
And I got that at
it was a White Elephant sale.
White Elephant.
Yeah.
Well, it was a White Elephant gift exchange.
Yeah.
Somebody gave it away because they thought it was terrible. I stole it from somebody else. I was like, dude, this is a $25 game.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
He wanted to know, do we count expansions as separate games? I don't.
No.
So... okay, and along those lines, I've got a couple more questions.
Whoa.
This is good. He's got lots of questions.
Yeah,
I like
great.
It. Do you have games that you like that take 2+ hours? Sometimes Settlers does, but I don't really like it when that happens.
What do I have that takes a long time? I have a Civilization board game, which I think I said before that it took like 2.5 hours... just to learn how to play the game.
That's terrible.
And like another 3 hours to play halfway through a full game with 2 players. I don't remember the timing. It's been a while, but I remember that. And I remember hating every minute of it. Formula D is a game that if you're playing it with all 10 players and you're playing a multiple lap race, that is a game that can take some time, especially if all the players don't know what they're doing.
Especially if they make it past turn 2.
Yeah. And most people give up, frankly, at that point, because you have to be committed to playing Formula D if you're going to play the game.
It's an exercise.
It's true.
And patience.
That's a game that I love that idea, but I've never been able to really play it the way it should be played. I don't know if I have any other really big epic things like that, because I don't, if a game takes more than an hour to play, I get bored.
Yeah, I need hour to hour and a half tops in a game. The one difference is role-playing games. I can sit for 4 hours and play a role-playing game, because there's a lot of transitions happening, and it's changing as you go.
Right.
And then he just said he doesn't think he's ever heard us talk about it. He asked, do we listen to other podcasts? And if so, which ones do we? And where do we get our gaming news? I get most of my gaming news from Twitter.
Yeah, me too, 100%.
And just other, I mean, we're friends with so many designers now, and we follow each other on Twitter, and that's, honestly, that's where I get most of my game news.
And through that, Cardboard Edison and Board Game Links on Twitter both are fantastic for news.
For other gaming podcasts, we listen to Flip the Table.
Flip the Table is, you know, like, in my top three favorite podcasts. I don't really listen to any other tabletop gaming podcasts.
I listen to 20 Minutes of Filler.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Katarsky and
Those guys are great.
That's a new one.
Yeah. Because a lot of tabletop gaming podcasts are kind of thinky, you know, and require you to pay attention. And if I'm listening at work a lot, and it's something to be listening to while I'm doing other stuff.
Right.
And so I feel like my attention span is not close enough to really devote, to be able to focus on that while I'm working.
Right.
Probably my number one most favorite podcast is Giant Bombcast.
Yeah,
Giant
Bomb. Love that. Yeah. You talk about it all the time.
Right. So, yeah, well, I'm sorry. Role Playing Public Radio, I'm still a big fan of.
We met the guy who hosted that one time, Ross Payton.
Yeah.
We've interviewed him on the show, but the first time we met him, you should have seen Rob. He was like a 12-year-old girl.
I kind of geeked out,
I'm like, hi, Ross, how are you?
It wasn't that bad.
No, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
He probably didn't notice, but I could tell.
Yeah.
And then the last thing he said was, hey, all right, that was probably enough. I hope you don't feel spammed by my questions. Last episode just got me thinking. No, absolutely not, Thomas. Keep them coming.
Thank you.
I love when they're long like that, and they cover a bunch of different topics, and we can comment in between.
Yep.
Hey, I think that's it.
That's enough.
One quick note. Twitter. We said a while ago, hey, follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
And when we hit 1,000 followers, we're going to give something away. And we were at like 600 or something then. Well, now we're at almost 900. And that's only been like a month or two. So, hey,
it's pretty cool.
You should probably follow us on Twitter. Get us to 1,000. We have a game.
Mm-hmm.
That
like a retail box game.
Retail box game. It was done on Kickstarter, but it's a very professional, awesome game.
Mm-hmm.
We got it from the publisher. The publisher is excited for us to give it away.
Yep.
We'll announce what it is when we hit 1,000, and we'll tell you how you can enter to win that game when we hit 1,000.
Right.
It'll be really easy, I promise. It won't be a complicated, no pitching games. You'll have to do one action.
One thing, super easy.
And send us an email, so maybe two steps.
Okay.
And then you'll be entered.
Yeah.
But we will tell you what that is and what the game is as soon as we hit 1,000.
Yeah.
We don't have that far to go, a little over 100, so.
Right. So that's pretty exciting. We're excited about that. I just hit 500 myself recently, 500 followers. I'm shocked, and thank you to everybody who followed me and helped me get there. So that's super, super cool. Do we have anything else we need to plug?
I think we're good.
Okay. Don't forget about the tabletop deathmatch. I think at this point it's nearly done when this episode's going to air. So I still don't know who the winner is. So, that's exciting. Keep it up. Tabletopdeathmatch.com. They're posting new episodes twice a week. We've only got a couple of weeks left. And Something From Nothing, our biweekly video show. Me and Jason and Chevy and TC hang out for an hour with some designer buddies, and we talk about games and game design, and sometimes I wear silly hats. And it's a good show, and if you can't watch it live, you can watch it on YouTube after the fact, and we have a podcast feed. You can download the audio from that as well. Some of the jokes are not as funny, but maybe they're even funnier when you can't see what's going on. I don't know. So check that out. You can find more about that at btgcoop.com.
Don't forget, when you see it at Sword Origins, tell us that you're a valiant builder.
You're a valiant builder.
And you may just get a Brian Johnson card.
You might. Check out our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, if you want to pick up a copy of Water Balloon Washout, Jason's fantastic game that he kickstarted that is super fun, good for all ages. And what'd you lose? It's behind the box.
Bag. Well, you didn't have to interrupt what you're doing.
I'm just trying to help. It's behind the box.
it's good for all ages. You should buy it. I've had quite a few sales already. I'm really happy with that. That's at some good. Point, we'll go over that the next month or so.
Sure.
But I've been really happy with how it's been selling so far, and I'm going to start getting it out to some extra reviewers coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Don't forget, we're going to do a small expansion for that, a one-card expansion that'll be free if you've already bought it, and you see us, I'll just give it to you.
Yep.
I won't have it for Origins, but I will have it for Gen Con.
Cool.
So.
Cool. Fantastic. And you can also get a copy of the Rumble Bum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, linked through our website to the Game Crafter. Hopefully soon on there as well, we will have access to Epic Monster Tea Party.
Yeah.
Basic and deluxe versions. So cross your fingers that that works out. I still don't know.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. And come see us at Origins. And that's it. So if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerlin. I am @poorly_designed. Give us some likes on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. If there are Android places out there that we should be looking at, let us know. We heard for the first time out about that podcasting Android app.
Dogcatcher.
So if there's a place where we can register and get votes and stuff on there, let us know. We'd love to do that.
We're in.
Come on back every week and hang out with us as we just kind of ramble on and try and do something. I mean, you'd think we'd have this down by now, right?
We're not professionals,
no,
Rob.
Far from it. Good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. So this is going to be episode 104. And let's look at our calendar. This one is going to go up on the 26th. 26th, that's going to be on Labor Day. No, it's not Labor Day. Labor Day is in September. This is Memorial Day.
I can never remember those two.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, just use this to remember that blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
Shut up.
It's not going to happen. I'm never going to remember.
Yeah.
The only reason I remember just that is because you said, wait, no, Labor Day is in September. And I was like, oh, he's right.
Yeah.
I think somebody's like, remember that Memorial Day is in May because it's an M.
Yeah.
And Labor Day is in September because, yeah, for no reason, because it's not Slaber Day.
Not going to try and remember that.
Oh, what if it was Saber Day?
Saber Day?
It'd be so much better.
Yeah, I would celebrate that holiday if everybody got to run around with swords for a day.
I'm going to do it.
That'd be all right.